reopen a work session on House Bill 2624. We're not moving this bill today. We're not prepared. But there is a gentleman who would like to come forth and speak. And Representative Witt, I'm sorry, I can't remember the gentleman's name.
Glenn Shuck.
Glenn, you want to come on up?
Mr. Chair, do you want me to refresh the lovely
committee? Yes, Glenn, forgive me. I'm out of order. Go ahead, sit down. Come on, it's not your fault.
Just to get everybody on the same page here, Mr. Chair.
Sit down.
House Bill 2624 was first heard on February 27th. The bill expands the state's dislocated worker program to include economically distressed workers who have been approved for economically distressed worker training as defined in the bill. There has been a fiscal impact statement issued on this on the original bill. You have in front of you two amendments. One is from Representative Witt, which replaces the bill. There's also a dash 2 from Representative Thatcher, which is identical to the dash 1, except it adds a sunset clause of January 2nd, 2012.
All right. Go ahead, sir. Welcome.
Yes. Good morning. My name is Glenn Shuck, and I'm the executive director of Labor's Community Service Agency, which is a partnership with United Way and the AFL-CIO. And in that capacity, I also contract and have been doing so for since 1984, working as a labor liaison with the Dislocated Worker Program, first under the JTPA and now under the WEA program. But I just met the other day with a group of liaisons throughout the state, to cover the whole state. And one of the things that came up this meeting at a very high concern, and we're seeing it on a pretty regular basis, when you are enrolled in a dislocated worker program or trade act programs, if you are enrolled in a program, you can then collect your unemployment. There's a real disconnect in this system when the unemployment, they say, well, you can only collect that unemployment if you're in a full-time training program. In other words, that means 12 credits or whatever that might be, or whatever the school deems to be full-time. We have a lot of dislocated workers, which some of you are probably familiar with, in their 40s, 50s, mid-50s, who have a lot of work skills that they've learned through their lifetime of working. And what they need is some skill up to get up with the market that's out there today, which their company might not have been in. And the idea of employment and training programs is to give people skills so they can readily go back to work and market those skills, market their schools and training, so they can go back to work at hopefully a family wage job quicker and sooner. So if you're interrupting people's lives, and we have rapid response teams that go out and speak to these workers before the layoff, to tell them about what's available out there. In our conversation, we talk to them about the skill-up training, the educational programs, and by the way, they have training unemployment insurance while you're in training, so you don't need to worry about losing your unemployment. What we're finding now is people are coming to the programs, they enroll in the programs, and they're very truthful, and they'll go in and say, well, I was in this training for 2 weeks, say, well, today, computer is a remedial class, you know, for some of us. Some of us who are of certain ages, you know, they're teaching computer in school, but if you're at 45, 50, or whatever, you may not have ever touched a computer, and you're coming out of Freightliner truck plant, and so they need to learn some computer skills so they can even search for a job nowadays. So a lot of people want to take computers so they can search for jobs, upgrade their skills, or if they go to another job, for example, truck drivers now, if you haven't been doing that, need to have some computer skills. So they go and take these computer skills classes. They also take classes to market and sell themselves once they get the skills and their old skills. So they do this, and they go sign up for their unemployment, and bingo, the check stopped. Well, you're in training, and it's not full-time training. This is an issue that needs to be addressed. Even the Trade Act program, when they looked at this, they've added an additional 26 weeks if you need remedial training. And there's something wrong when our state system isn't set up to address the needs of these workers, especially in the times that we're in now. I've been doing this since 1984, and we're back about where we were in 84, even in a worse situation. So we need to find a way so we don't discourage these workers to use the system so they can better themselves in society, make a living and a wage that they can support their family on. So I happened to run into Brad last night at a meeting. I was going to be calling him, but I ran into him at this event last night, and he says, we're going to be talking about that tomorrow. Would you like to come and talk about it? And so I stayed the night, and I come here at 8 o'clock. And basically, I would like for you folks to take a look at what's going on in the unemployment system and to address those issues so we're not putting people into harm's way of losing their unemployment, potentially discouraging. Why wouldn't we have employment and training programs? And we ourselves are setting up roadblocks to keep these people from getting to where they want. And it's also very discouraging. Most of these people want to be collecting unemployment. They don't want to go to school for 6 months or a year. What they want to do is get their skills, be able to market those skills, and go back to work. So basically, that's what I've got to say to this group, and I hope it's well received.
Any questions of this gentleman this morning? Representative Hobie.
I don't really have a question, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to recognize in the past I've had some contact with Mr. Shuck, just working to help working families along the way, and he's just been a great advocate for the state of Oregon for working families. I just want to recognize that.
Thank you, and we all appreciate your service, and I'm glad you got a chance to get down here. And we aren't going to talk about it any longer today because we aren't working it, but I'm glad you had the opportunity to come down and say what you had to say, and I think you had a lot of important stuff to say about workers out there that need help. So,
thank you.
Thank you, sir. Keep up the good work. Representative Escobar.
Before we leave this subject, I had a situation in Southern Oregon where, and this is the epitome of 22. We had an individual that was working a full-time job, working a part-time job, and going to school full-time. Lost the full-time job, lost the part-time job, was ineligible for unemployment because he was a student. So then he had, of course, he was married with children, had to make the choice between working and going to school.
Yep, I had three part-time jobs, at least two, frequently, sometimes three part-time jobs when I was at the university. And I worked full-time all the way through my college time. It's a miracle I graduated.
Representative Escobar, I'd like to respond to that. That's not uncommon for people to come in that situation. And so if they can work full-time and go to school, and then they lose their full-time job, there should be a way to transition to that and still continue their training and do their job search. So, I thank you for those comments because it's pretty common out there.
Yes, it is.
All right.
Thank you very much for coming, folks. We're moving on. I'm going to close the work session, House Bill 2624. And for anyone in the crowd, in the audience here today, we are not going to be working House Bill 2633. So if you came for that, and that's the only reason you're here, I apologize for you driving all the way down or wherever you come from, but we're not going to do that today. We're going to carry it over to Wednesday. With that, I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2501.
Mr. Chair, committee members, House Bill 2501 requires the Department of State Police to establish base pay for troopers. During the first hearing on February 20th, the proponents brought forth a -2 amendment, which replaces the bill. It amends RS 243746, which is the arbitration procedure under PECBA, otherwise known as the last best offer. It indicates that for Department of State Police troopers, the term comparable includes the base pay for city police officers employed by the five most populous cities in Oregon. You do have in front of you a fiscal impact statement for the -2, and there is a subsequent referral to Ways and Means on the measure.
Folks, we've heard this. It is going to Ways and Means. At this time, I would entertain a motion to the -2s, correct?
Yes.
Do I have a motion? Oh, Mr. DeLashmet, would you like to come up and walk through this with us, I reckon? Everybody's on the same page.
Actually, for the record, Brian DeLashman, representing the Oregon State Police Officers Association, the state troopers. Obviously, the -2s are our amendments, and we fully support them. But the last I had heard was that there was a letter from the speaker that this would not go to Ways and Means. So I'm wondering if that's changed because you got a fiscal back, even though the fiscal is not until 2013.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
We did submit a letter to the speaker's office requesting for the referral to be removed, and we were denied that request. So we do have to move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
All righty then. I would entertain a motion to move the -2s into the bill.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Representative Escobar.
I move that we move the dash two amendments as an appendix to 2501.
House Representative Escobar moves dash two amendment in House Bill 2501. Is there discussion? Is there any opposition to the motion? And by the way, Representatives Kenemer and Thatcher are excused. See, no opposition, so moved. A motion on the bill as amended. Representative Escobar.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2501 with amendments to the House floor with a due pass recommendation with a referral to Ways and Means.
Representative Escobar moves. Teresa, did you have?
No, that works. No, that
Representative
works.
Escobar
so
moves.
Ways and Means referral is added on. That's
Thank
fine.
You. Representative Escobar moves as House Bill 2501 as amended to the floor with due pass recommendation with a subsequent referral to Ways and Means. Is there any discussion? Do I see any opposition? And once again, Representatives Kenemer and Thatcher are excused today. All right, with no opposition, so moved. Will Ways and Means assign a carrier?
Yes, from what I remember, Mr. Chair, they typically assign a carrier from the policy committee.
I believe they
would come back and ask me for that. There's a preference, so that's usually what happens.
Believe. We have a friend here that may be interested in carrying this bill, and it would be
Representative Olson.
Representative
yes.
Olson. And the chair is
yes.
talking, and when the chair is talking, nobody talks. Thank you. You can laugh, but you can't talk. I believe it is Representative Olson
we'll never get to
talk. I think it's Friday. I'm not talking about me. Is Representative Olson, I would recommend, gets the...
Mr. Chair, I will put that request in as it's moving forward in the Ways and Means.
Thank you, Teresa. With that, I'm going to close the work session on Bill 2501, and I'm going to gleefully and happily and joyfully continue my work now, because I love working with all my very much valued colleagues. Open a public hearing on House Bill 2731.
Chair, committee members, House Bill 2731 permits a contracting agency and a person that is appealing the disqualification or the denial, revocation, or revision of being pre-qualified for public contracting work to agree upon a time in which either the Department of Administrative Services or the local contract review board must conduct the hearing and decide an appeal. There is no revenue or fiscal impact on the measure.
Great. We have three folks, Matt Jaffe, Jim Van Dyke, and Jeff Baer, would like to come up and speak to this bill. Come on up, guys. Whoever wants to start first, gentlemen.
Okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Jim Van Dyke. I'm an attorney with the City of Portland. This bill concerns a very minor change to the pre-qualification procedures in current state law. What currently happens is that with the City of Portland, every year we conduct an annual pre-qualification process based on state law criteria, making sure that contractors who bid on city projects are qualified to do so. Under current state law, if there's any concern on our part whether they're qualified or not, we have to make a decision within 30 days to determine whether they're qualified. Sometimes contractors don't submit all the information the first time around that we'd like to see. We've asked them for some clarification. They're willing to submit us some additional things, but they don't get the information to us within a 30-day time period. Under current law, we have to make our decision within 30 days, and we can't extend that period of time at all. So even if we're waiting for that information to come from the contractor, and even though they've told us they're going to be able to meet everything, we're going to have to make a decision. That seems to be a little restrictive, and so we propose that if the contractor and the local contracting agency both agree, that 30-day time limit can be extended. We think that's going to make a more efficient, effective process. We want to work with our contractors. We get better bids the more contractors we have bidding on our projects, and we like to see as many as we can. We think because of mutual agreement, being required that this, neither the city nor the contractor can be taking advantage of the process. We just want to be able to give them a brief extension to do what they need to do.
Thank you. Go ahead. Whoever wants to go next.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. I'm Jeff Baer. I'm the director of the Bureau of Purchases, and I'll just give you an example of what can happen under current state law, the way it's written. And that is, for example, we've had a very large dollar value, highly complex construction project, and if for some reason we deny or disqualify a contractor's pre-qualification status, they have the right to appeal that decision, and under state law, they have a right to hold a hearing within 30 days. If under that parameter, they need to hire an attorney or to have further review of the documents, that does not allow them to do that. And so in one case, we've actually had to have them rescind their appeal and then reapply it again to start the 30-day clock again. So in this case, under a mutual agreement to extend that time to allow for ample opportunity to review the records, it would allow us both to agree to extend that time frame to schedule it upon everybody's convenience. Thank you.
Go ahead, sir.
Chair Schaffler, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Matt Chaffee with the City of Portland's Office of Government Relations. Thanks very much for taking the time to hear this bill. Jeff and Jim are the experts on this bill, so I was just up here to help answer any questions you may have on this. Thank you very much for your time.
So currently, they can appeal, and the hearing has to be held within 30 days of the appeal or of the denial.
30 days of the appeal has to happen within 30 days of the denial.
Okay.
Okay.
And then we are going to allow them an unlimited time to appeal and have a hearing with this bill. Is that correct?
Well, Mr. Chair, I don't think it's an unlimited time because both the city and the contractor would have to agree as to the length of the extension.
Okay.
So I believe with that mutual agreement, that would prevent that those kind of unlimited time periods. We certainly want to get that wrapped up as soon as possible, and generally it's in the contractor's best interest to be able to bid on projects, especially in this economy.
Yeah,
so
no.
I don't see any time problem.
I understand completely, but the city has the option if they really feel they have all the information in front of them and a contractor is not qualified to say, no, we're not going to extend this period of time, and the denial stands. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
But because
correct.
Of some technical difficulty or some, you know, mistake or just for some reason the information didn't get there in a timely fashion, then and make a reasonable judgment to say, yes, we understand, you're right, we do need to extend this period of time. It does have a bearing on whether we deny you or not. And then sit down and talk it out outside of the 30 days if necessary. Is that correct?
Absolutely.
All right. And Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Why did we put a 30-day time frame on this in the first place? Does anyone know? There must be some reason. They just didn't pull that out of the air.
My guess is, Mr. Chair, Representative Esquivel, is that the short time period was put in there to make sure that contracting agencies did not manipulate the time period to keep extending contractors on out for a long period of time. They wanted a quick decision on that. That would be my best guess.
Follow up?
Yes, please.
Will this allow that?
Well, not if both parties have to agree to an extension.
That would be my answer, Representative Esquivel.
Representative Matthews.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I think I get this, and I think I understand, and I'm in agreement, but I just want to make sure, if there's not a mutual agreement amongst both parties, and assuming that, with all due respect to the profession, attorneys are involved, then scheduling can be difficult. If you don't come to an agreement on 60 days, 75 days, what happens at that point? Does it default in?
The default would be 30 days, and
okay.
The appeal hearing would have to be held within that period of time.
Okay.
And if there is evidence of manipulation, people can go to court, and the contracting agency can find themselves in hot water.
Correct. There's a provision in state law which permits them to go to court for violation of the public contracting laws and recover attorney fees if the contracting agency has done that.
Right. Okay. Any further questions? Okay. Thank you. Is there anything more to say? Otherwise, I'm going to. All right. Thank you for coming down.
Thank you.
Anyone else want to testify on House Bill 2731? Okay. Will you go out and get Brent?
Sure.
This bill. I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2731. I'm going to open a work session on House Bill 2731.
Mr. Chair, I'll move House Bill 2731 to the House floor with a due pass recommendation.
Representative Cameron moves House Bill 2731 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Representative Cameron moved House Bill 2731 to the floor with due pass recommendation. Do you have any comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I'm prepared to vote.
Very good. Any opposition to the motion? All right, seeing none, so moved. I think this should probably be explained on the floor a little bit. Does anyone want to care to volunteer to carry this bill? Representative Matthews?
I'd be happy to carry my
American. With that, I'm going to close the work session on House Bill 2731. Is there anything for the good of the order other than to tell the chairman he's a grumpy grump when people are interrupting
Chairman
him
Crabb, man, I said no.
All right, with that, we're adjourned.